There's a gentleman who he's a radio talk show host, and he says, you know, when I was young, it was the bad things that make me cry. But as I get older, it's the good things that make me cry.
Hello, and welcome to Salesforce Trails and Trials, where two Salesforce architects and special guests share their wins and woes so that you can learn with us.
Thanks for listening. This week, we talk about Eric's trip to Joshua Tree, a great QuickBooks integration discovery, what can happen if you make a field required, and some SaaS around physical space and things, and making pizza. Enjoy, and don't forget to subscribe. All right, Eric.
Hey, what's going on?
How's it going?
Everything is great. Spring is here. Work's going good.
Beautiful. Yeah, love it. And no, it's exciting. I got my first vaccine yesterday, which is great. Mm-hmm. So I got to play pickleball like someone punched me in the arm today.
Yep.
So I'm feeling good. And just I'm stoked for those people who came up with that in such a record amount of time. So, and I got to use my turn. I got notified by my turn. We talked about it in episode one. And so it did its part, letting me know that I'm up. And
Salesforce workflow at work.
Right.
Send great. Me emails using email templates.
Yeah, great little automation right there. I actually got a text message as well. So
excellent.
Got some digital engagement in there, which is good stuff. So let's talk about what we learned lately.
I took a vacation for a couple of days. So I think, you know, just like in the previous episode, you just came back from vacation and what was top of mind was that. Me too. We went down to Palm Springs. It's my second time down there, maybe third. And we drove down, it's 7 hours from the Bay Area. We took a detour through Antelope Valley, which is, at this time of year, has large swaths of poppy flowers, which was, you know, I'd always heard about, and people put pictures on Instagram. And so I was excited to be able to drive through that. We didn't stop because my whole family isn't stop and smell the roses kind of people. I always think someday when I go take vacations by myself, I don't know, my daughter's at college or whatever, I'll just bring my camera and I'll stop wherever I want to. And I'll read all the signs.
All the information signs. Yes.
So anyways, it was good. We went to Joshua Tree National Park, big desert, lots of Joshua trees. I played the U2 album and we exited the park and, you know, saw cool forms of life, cactuses, plants, lizards.
Yeah, it's one of the few times you can use the term cacti. Right. I mean, you're right. Trying to look
cacti
for every opportunity
really
to say cacti.
Thing. Yes. Let's say cacti, all kinds of cacti, saharos, which are those big ones you see in Bugs Bunny cartoons that have like the big arm.
Okay.
And then, you know, those yucca trees, which are the Joshua trees. And then something called a choyo, I think it's called a choyo plant or choyo cactus that are these small little furry things about 4 feet high. Anyway, good to unplug for a few days, not check my email, see wide open expanses. It was great.
That's awesome. Now, did you do some research before you went?
I did look at a couple things. There's a website I've been wanting to use for a while called Atlas Obscura. And I think the content is community submitted. And you basically just put in the town or the region you're going to. And it says, oh, check these out. There's 21 items you might want to see. And in the case of Palm Springs, there's an actual oasis you can go visit with palm trees and a pond or some kind of water feature that's natural in a place called Thousand Palms. And then, I don't know, there's some inns and some abandoned, you know, there's a lake down there called the Salton Sea, which is a strange, salty lake in the middle of the desert. So cool stuff like that. It was just kind of like, it puts stuff on the radar. It's just go out and see. You know, while you're off the beaten path, what else might you see?
Love that. Have you ever heard the history real quick of the Salton Sea?
I know there was like a real estate development that was attempted, but that's where it stops. I don't know if somebody created it or what happened.
Yeah, essentially a part of the agriculture that was going on and maybe also development, but there was a bunch of canals that were being built off of the Colorado River.
Mm.
Essentially the Colorado River would kind of change its, I think it's rake levels flow. A little bit. Yeah. And so there was this kind of break in one of these canals and it just a ton of water went through and that created the Salton Sea.
No kidding.
It's kind of interesting.
Wow. Interesting. Today, I mean, I was looking through Google Maps. I love maps and you can go find these ghost town. Maybe they're a ghost town. These developments that the streets are paved, but it looks like a 1950s end of the world, dusty, ruined, half completed buildings. You know, weird site that just looks like somebody was trying to sell something here, and a few people bought some of these plots, and there are some houses there, but it was an unsuccessful real estate venture.
Oh, interesting.
And they're still there.
Yeah, exactly. The oasis. It's like the oasis is slowly fading.
Got dry again. Yeah. But wow. I hear it's a, you know, there's still water and it's salty. And so that's all I know.
Nice. Well, it sounds like a great time. Welcome cool. back.
Thank you.
In our Just One Small Thing segment today, we're going to talk about what are the impacts of making a field required? So let's give right. a little kind of a little overview. So on the Salesforce platform, you have three places that you can essentially make a field required. And there may be others as well, but the three kind of configuration choices are you can, when you create the field in setup, you can make it be required at the object level. That means that anything and everything, no matter what integration or otherwise, right? If you're going to create a record in this in this object, you have to, create a value in this field.
Right. So actually on the screen where you're setting the field name or the field type, I can't remember what it is, there's a checkbox that says
make required. It says okay. make required. Yes.
And if you make it an index field, it also makes it required, right? I mean, there can't be any blank index fields.
That's true. Yeah. The second thing is on, like, let's say I don't want it there, but I want it to be on my, I want it to be conditionally required, but not based on any data, just whoever uses this page layout.
Mm-hmm.
So I can make a page layout for a set of users and I can require it on the page layout.
So the same field. So I remember there's a little red star that ends up sitting star. Next to that field on the page layout. And that's in right. the classic page layout editor.
That's correct. Yes. Which uh-huh. is slowly being deprecated for the new custom form builder in Lightning. But yep. But that's the second place. And then the third place is when it has something to do context sensitive, whether a data or the user context or something, you can create a validation rule mm-hmm. to make a field required.
Yep.
All right. So those are the three. So let's talk about the impacts of that. So if I were to turn that on, what are some of the big things that can happen from that small change?
So, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is suddenly your users might be shocked. They're going to go edit something they've always been editing, go change my opportunity fields. And suddenly when they click save, they get an error message that says, sorry, you can't do it until you fill in your next steps field mm-hmm. or whatever the field is. So that one's kind of obvious. Mm-hmm. What's another one?
Another one is like with historical records. So typically, right, when you want to make a field required, it means that, you know, there's probably some records that have it blank, thus why you're trying to make it required. And when you do that, those historical records now become locked because they can't be modified due to this change. So
you can't open it up. You can't click edit and change.
Oh,
it?
You can click edit, but if you try and okay. save it, it has no value.
Oh,
so think
right.
about, for example, whether it's integrations or data enrichment tools, or like, you know, whether it's data.com or you know, Clearbit or whatever. These tools are kind of working in the background, and now they can't save back any detail on those records because wherever that value is blank, it's now blocked from saving.
Right. Yes,
and that's
that
one that's tough
one.
Because you won't really, there's no log for this. Like, you know, I mean,
right.
there is, I guess, technically somewhere, but most users or admins would never see it. They're going to hear about it sometime in the future. Hey guys, like I noticed, you know, all my phone numbers are out of date, or I'm not getting any more address updates mm-hmm. on these leads. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
So in particular, saying wherever there's integrations or outside systems that are updating your records, like you mentioned Data.com or Hoover's or whatever,
mm-hmm.
that suddenly will run into a problem, and now the record won't be able to be updated by that outside integration because you just added a new condition to make that record savable. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I never thought about that.
Yeah, and the person who installed the app might get an email saying like, uh-huh. hey, you know, we're getting these errors, but that could be, you know, a user that's no longer
a deactivated user.
Could be a deactivated user. Exactly. Are we like inductive and dovetailing or what? Right. Yes. So that's an interesting one. I think yours is an important one as well, because this change, like the UX impact on the users is pretty significant, especially if it's a field that's not kind of universally known inside the business. So many times you'll have a field that somebody says, we need to have this, you know, number of sites. You're like, okay. But like half the business looks at this and they're like, number of sites? Like I never, ever deal with this data. Like, totally. What does this even mean?
Yeah. We used to have something at Salesforce. We probably still do. It's just more out of sight. But we had a change review board. And on a monthly basis, all the admins for all the departments, so service, sales, marketing, would get together and say, I want to add this field. I want to make this change. I want to, you know, do whatever. And everybody would share all their needs. And people had the chance to stand up and say, I don't use that field, or I already have that field. And, you know, at least have a little bit of a check into what the changes you want to make. Because as you get bigger, and as you have multiple page layouts and multiple teams using Salesforce, you absolutely can use Salesforce and should use Salesforce across departments, because how else are you going to get a single view of the customer? But what people sometimes do is they create redundant fields or do things like this where they weren't thinking about all the use cases. And ideally, even if it's just to share best practices, get your admins together once a month or your business analysts together once a month and just review all the changes. I'm not sure everybody does that. We tell people all the time, we call it having a center of excellence for your Salesforce implementations. Yeah, I can see that how that could be a problem.
Well, and I think what you're speaking of, right? Like there's, by default, we get 500 custom fields on an object.
Now, at least, I think it's 800.
That can be increased to 800.
Okay.
Right? Through what's called the black tab features, right? So that you can put a case to Salesforce support and you can increase certain things like that, right? And so if you think about, I mean, I worked years ago on a project, you know, with like a major water and power company, and they had 800 fields and they had used all 800 fields on a few key objects. And yeah, you think about it, in a scenario like that, someone making a field required the level of change management and governance that's required over such a simple checkbox, because the impact it can have across the business is significantly disruptive. It can halt major processes, you know, especially if you think about like there are objects, let's call it, you know, whether it's field service, for example, or Salesforce billing, or, you know, financial applications where behind the scenes, you know, they're creating transactions and they're creating service appointments and all these kind of things. So if you want to say we should have that field, you know, required and or a validation rule that maybe doesn't contemplate every scenario, maybe doesn't contemplate that, you know, we need to let the integration user always save this record. Now, all of a sudden, behind the scenes, right, you have these, you know, financial ledger records that are they're not being created. And really, those errors are surfaced unless you have an error logging utility or you have the Salesforce debug log turned on, which generally people don't.
Right.
By design, it's not supposed to be an ever-present error log, right? Then you'd have to go and look at your Apex jobs and maybe do some investigation. But really, the way you're going to see that is through user pain. Yeah. Somewhere.
This is sort of not even a Salesforce specific thing. If you change a database and you have not looked at all of the impacts of that database, it's going to happen in any system. So the difference with Salesforce is we give the admins the power to just go click and like it makes a certain feel of the database mandatory. And it is adhered to by security and the API and the page layouts. There is a tool on AppExchange called, I'm going to just try the name. It's called Field Something.
Field Trip.
Field Trip.
Yeah.
And Field Trip does analysis of your fields to tell you which fields are used and how much are they used. Mm-hmm. And I don't know of any other tools like that, but you need a tool like that every once in a while to look at.
It's a great app.
You need to clean up your instance every while. It's like having a garden. You got to weed. And there you have to realize that over time, like newer records are not using this field. Can we retire it? Can we take it off the page layout? Can we start getting rid of it? It's maintenance that just has to happen. Eventually it will catch up to you. But this would be one thing where at least you could use a tool like that to say, you know, how much data, and you could run a report too. You could run a report saying how many of my records don't have this field filled in. You just got to know as an admin going in that this is a, you know, just one small thing I might do that actually could cause a problem. It's so easy in Salesforce, but when in greater situations where you have integrations, it's something you got to think about.
No, it's
cool. That was a good one. I didn't think about that those third-party products that would have problems saving.
For sure. It's a tough one. And this goes back to, you know, last episode, we talked about enterprise patterns and the service layer. And so this kind of highlights where, you know, for bulk data operations and some of those kind of periodic, but sometimes even unplanned maintenance events around data, maybe there's an acquisition and I need to bring in a bunch of data, or, you know, hey, you know, there's a service we just got to come in and enrich a bunch of data for the sales team, like those things, without a service layer, it's very difficult because now you have like, well, how many of these, you know, validation rules and things that never contemplated this use case do I have? And I have to go into each one. I have to analyze each one's criteria. Mm-hmm. I have to potentially now go through the change management process of revising each one because I have no switch that I can just turn it off temporarily. Yeah. You know, so that's a good nod to, even if you're a small organization, right? Having the ability to have a preference of when you can kind of turn these things on and off is really, really key. And, you know, certainly the preference of using a validation rule versus an object level required field is preferred because it just makes it more flexible and accessible.
Cool.
And a small note. Sorry, go ahead.
Good tip. That's all I'm saying.
Right? A small note on, you know, there's two things I think that come up here. One is the UX principle of addition by subtraction. So when we think about having a release, it'd be good to have a part of every release, or at least depending on what the deployment cycle is in a business, have every, you know, every few months have something where you're actually focused on removing things. You're focused on reducing, scaling down, eliminating unnecessary fields, right? Rather than always doing additions, because it's very easy for a Salesforce org to get bloated. And I think the field limits and things like that are kind of created to help people do the addition by subtraction more often, but I don't see it as a really common theme for releases.
Yeah, only wise admins know about that. And, you know, IT people talk about technical debt, and you have to think about this for a while to get how it really is like debt. But the thing, you're basically ignoring something that's a problem, and there is an interest on that thing, and it keeps growing. And just like a credit card payment you're not paying, it's just going to keep growing, keep growing, keep growing. And eventually it's going to result in you not being able to release very quickly, development slow, deploying code is going to be slow. There will be things because of these things you've avoided. And they're going to start to compound. So if you can just pay off a little of your debt every release and remove, do some of that cleanup, have a list of things you need to take care of, do a high level analysis of what is the level of effort, and just scope it into each release, that is the way to go.
Yeah, and that's a really good analogy. Think about it. It's like a mortgage, you know?
It's like a mortgage. I mean, you just got to pay it off. And, you know, years ago at Salesforce, we had so much debt, it was causing us to, it was making development complicated. This is like 10 years ago. And we took, I don't know, I'd say two releases. And it was when we first started talking about trust. It was called a trust release or a truth, I forget what it's called. And we basically just took care of some technical debt. We rolled out a bunch of APIs that were missing for the metadata API. We unified some UI. I forget all that we did. It was a ton of work. And I think it was over two releases. And that doing that then enabled us to accelerate our delivery over the next many years, having taken care of some of those problems. So, you know, we go through it too. We go through it under the platform in Salesforce. We at Salesforce, where there was our own CRM instance, we got to clean our garden, take out old stuff, make it better. It affects everybody. And it's no matter what platform you're on. You could be on anything. And if you just ignore the stuff, it's gonna pile up.
Sure. Nah, that's a good point. So let's transition to what we're excited about. So it's almost dinner time, you know? What are you excited about?
What I'm excited about is a practical. Everybody can learn from this. I learned how to make pizza. And I learned how to make it puff up right around the edges.
Ooh.
And we put the sausage from scratch. So this was on a team event that just, you know, four, eight or so of us were on. We found a really affordable way to have a chef come on the show, on the online with my team. And so we paid his fees, but then we each did the shopping. We had an ingredient list. We went out and got whatever, the basil, the tomatoes, the you know, the ingredients, the mozzarella, the pine nuts. So we each went to our local shop, got that, had the flour, had the water, had the yeast, and we had that in advance. And then we had a team event where the chef got on the Zoom with us and walked us through, you know, blueing the yeast and then making the dough and putting it off to the side and getting our sauces ready. And by the time the sauces were ready, we did two. We did a pesto, and pesto and prosciutto was one topping, and then margarita, just tomato and mozzarella. By the time those were ready, the dough was ready. You know, there were a bunch of things I learned, but one of them was, if you want a nice puffy ring around the outside of your pizza, take that ball of dough, douse it in flour when you take it out of the bowl it was rising in, put it on the board, and then just a half inch in from the outside of your dough ball, just start pushing down and just basically never touch the outside of your pizza and let it be, you know, let it just be as puffed up as it ever was when it was doing its rising thing, and then flatten the middle and stretch it out. Hmm. And I don't know. I was amazed at the outcome. And then also we heated our pizza stone under broil, or 525 actually is what I had on my oven. And I put my pizza stone at the very top. And you know, my pizza was done in 4 minutes in my oven at home.
Wow.
And it was super. So anyways, great pizza at home. You know, it was a good team event. It was a cheap team event. And it's a practical life skill. So that was what I was excited about.
Awesome. Week. Did you take any pictures?
I do have pictures.
All right, so let's get those pictures into the show notes. We want to see the proof. Yes. Is in the pizza.
I'm proud of the pictures too. It looked really good.
Awesome. Now you're one of those people who takes pictures of their food.
yeah, it's true.
Awesome. Well, I wish that I don't know how to make pizza, and so you might inspire me for that. So I think, sure. You know, what I'm excited about is I've done a little bit of learning. We talked about this pickleball venture, and so I'm learning about all the various ways that we are leveraging and utilizing kind of shared items, shared space, mm-hmm. primarily. And so, right. You know, some of these examples I've talked about are you know, like for example, Swimply.
What's that?
Lets you, Swimply is a, you know, all these, the websites will be in the show notes, but Swimply enables you to simply rent swimming pools, thus Swimply.
So I can put my pool on Swimply.
You can put your pool on Swimply and rent it by the hour. Yeah, or if you don't have a pool, you can go rent another one by an hour, by the hour, to have a little birthday party or take a swim. Or, you know, I just think it's amazing, you know, and it's fully like insured, and people can throw in other amenities like barbecues and just the other things that you'd want to do with a swimming pool.
Very cool. Very cool.
Another one is called Neighbor. Mm-hmm. So Neighbor, let's say, you know, you have a bedroom or a garage or a driveway that you're not using and you want to rent it for space. So someone can park their car or their RV, they can put some old, you know, maybe some office stuff in there temporarily. Yeah, you can rent out your excess space on Neighbor, which is kind of cool.
I could have used that when I lived in the city. There were so many apartments you could rent, but very few had parking.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew people who were willing to rent out their parking space or pay an extra $300 a month at the time back to rent somebody else's parking space.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Right. A pretty neat idea. Another one is called Splacer. So like Placer, but with an S, Splacer. And it enables you to rent like event space. So if you want to have like a wedding or a bar mitzvah, a birthday party, and you want it to be in like a beautiful veranda, right? Mm. You can go on Splacer and find like one of those nice houses up on the hill, and they rent out their backyard by the hour.
Very cool.
Right? Isn't that cool? And another one, you highlighted this one, which was Good Neighbor enables you to take those power tools and tools that you have in your garage that, like, how often do those get used, right?
Yeah.
You can rent those out.
I got a blower that I use like once every 2 months.
Yeah, you could rent those out to your neighbors. And, you know, utilization wise, like we can buy less, throw away less, mm-hmm. just by all kind of benefiting by utilizing everything more. And you know what? Everybody gets a little cut, which is nice. It's a win-win.
Yeah. I thought of another one here. It's called Turo.
Turo for cars.
Do you know that one?
Yes.
So you got your Mustang or your whatever car you think other people would rent. Mm-hmm. And I know people who actually go to town. They land in LA, they land wherever they are, and instead of going to Hertz or Avis or whatever, they go to Turo, and you get to use somebody's, you know, I've seen Porsches, I've seen Mustangs, I've seen Jeeps.
Yeah.
You know, it's just somebody's car and they're willing to rent it out by the day.
I love that, right? Yeah. I actually thought about renting a Lamborghini just for the day.
That's all you need. Right. I've had that thought too.
Just for the day.
I don't need to own it. It's be $5,000 for the day. But you know what? It's a waste. You know, I'm not the right person to own a Lamborghini, but everybody wants to try one.
Right. Exactly. And I'll bring my cats and it'll be like Lamborghato.
Yeah. Excellent.
The final one for business, right? Especially now, right? Given the fact that many people may or may not go back fully to the office, is called Liquid Space. And it enables you, like, if you need to have a conference with a bunch of people, you know, in 3 days, great. You go on Liquid Space, and these are now businesses that own, you know, that, you know, are leasing office space. And they're like, hey, we have a conference room. We have some office space here. It's unused, right? Like, you can come in, use it for the week. So when you have a project, you get an opportunity to collaborate, you make it happen, you get plenty of space for everybody. And then when you're done, pack up and leave.
Very cool. So for companies with a lot of remote users, it's office space that's available because of COVID. Or any other reason, you know, you're not using as much space. That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. So I'm loving that that whole movement of like the Lyft and Uber, kind of for lots of other things, power tools. You know, it's pretty cool. Very exciting.
Yeah, and what a list we found. I'm surprised at all of those. That's really cool.
That's super fun. So so let's talk about, you know, something that's that inspires us of late.
I think for me an inspiring thing happened in Joshua Tree. We were in the town of 29 Palms, which is just outside, I think it's outside Joshua Tree National Park, but maybe it's inside. And, you know, we'd spent the morning at the park. We went early because it was going to be 95 or 100 degrees in early April in the California desert. And we were done looking around by noon and we were hungry. So we drove through Jack in the Box. And the inspiring thing was, you know, we were with other friends and they drove ahead of us and they went through the drive-through and then we came up behind them and the drive-through person said, oh, your order's been paid for. And we thought, oh, that's nice. Or I thought, oh, that's nice. You know, my friends, you know, took care of my lunch. That's really cool. And so I said, okay. Well, and then my daughter said, Dad, do it for people behind us. And so what a great idea. Okay. So we just paid it in. I said, okay, take care of the people behind us. We'll pay theirs. And theirs was the same price as ours, luckily. And then I said, okay, well, make sure you tell them that they're the second person to have their thing paid for. And the person, the drive-through person said, actually, they'll be the third because when your friend drove up, somebody had already paid for them. So a stranger paid for my friend. My friend paid for me. I paid for a stranger.
Nice.
And then we left. And, you know, I like to think that went on.
Yeah, it's still happening today. It's probably still happening
today. So it's this little Jack in the Box. And I was thinking, man, what a great PR thing that could, I mean, it should be just nice on its own. Let's enjoy that. And then as somebody who thinks about marketing, wouldn't it be great if you knew you went to Jack in the Box and yours would be paid for, but you could pay for the next person's as a pay it forward thing? Wouldn't that be so cool? So that was an inspiring thing that happened to us. You know, you and I were talking, getting ready for the show, and it reminded me of, I think I was watching a TV show on Italy, and it could have been Stanley Tucci's Finding Italy. I think he was going through Rome or maybe Florence. And there is a tradition at cafes in Italy called the suspended coffee. I think it's called Caffè Sospetto. I don't know how to say it in Italian, but it's the same thing. When you go buy a coffee, you pay for yours and you pay for an extra one. And that allows people who can't afford the coffee to walk up and say, hey, do you have one for me? And it's community oriented. And, how cool to see that idea, but how cool to see something similar at Jack in the Box. That was my, you know, I always am impressed by when humanity shows its good parts. It's pretty cool.
It's good. Yeah. There's a gentleman who, he's a radio talk show host, and he says, you know, when I was young, it was the bad things that make me cry. But as I get older, it's the good things that make me cry.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah, it's more touching. Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, you got gratitude.
I think my kind of highlight, something noteworthy that inspires me today, or you know, this last week, is I had a neighbor who is just a wonderful family. They have triplets. Can you imagine having three kids at the same time?
I mean, that's a big bang right there.
And the mom was diagnosed with, she had a kind of a seizure a year and a half ago or so. And they found out the reason was she had a brain, tumor. Mm. And usually, I mean, the story ends pretty quickly after that, right? Sadly. But in her case, right, like they were able to do surgery. They pulled it out. You know, she's going through chemo and radiation at the same time, which my foster mom did that. And it was just intensely challenging, you know, on the body and everything. And then because of this, we're in the pandemic, right? So like she's immunocompromised. And so therefore the kids can't see any friends, can't go to school, can't do anything. And then she can't drive because it was a seizure. So she doesn't have her license, right? And so the dad is basically having to manage everything. And thankfully he's getting some help from his in-laws or whatever. But you know, she had her birthday this last weekend, and so a group of us all got together and, you know, basically did a little special thing, put a bunch of balloons on her front yard and whatever. So she, when she came out, and her kids helped set it all up and, you know, put notes inside the balloons and wrote on them and whatever. It was just wonderful to give them a little opportunity to kind of get out and participate. And what I thought about was that, you know, it's almost like these people are hidden in plain sight. Like if I didn't know them and have them share with me and whatever, what was going on, I might not have recognized that, you know? And I wonder how many people do I see every day who are dealing with all the same challenges that I do? You know, we call them first world problems, right? Like, oh yeah, it's the traffic, or my coffee's too hot, or, you know, I overcooked my breakfast, or, you know, whatever it might be. Yeah. My phone's not working right. Or, you know, it's coming from space, you know, I'm complaining, right? Whatever. but at the same time, they're also dealing with the fact that like they're fighting cancer, you know, or they're recovering from a brain tumor, or they also have their parent, their mother or father at home who's like got Alzheimer's. Or it just made me think about just like basically be better at looking for those kind of, I call them kind of, they're like quiet warriors, quiet fighters, you know, like they're out there and they're dealing with all the same stuff everybody else is, but yet they have all this additional struggle, and yet, right, they're smiling, they're just giving so much more. And it awakened me to want to recognize that and to be more perceptive about seeing that, recognizing them, being more empathetic, and just not glossing over the fact that, you know what, there's a lot of people out there who have a lot of challenge that they're not putting signs up and wearing t-shirts about, but that's very real. And and so, you know, basically their experience was inspiring to me because, you know, we did a very small thing, but they've really, you know, been doing a really big thing for 2 years in keeping this whole family going and, you know, keeping the bills paid and keeping everybody driven around and doing everything within a pandemic. It's super challenging. And I was just happy to be able to create a smile, you know?
Yeah, that is a test of anybody's persistence. I mean, to get up every day and do whatever you got to do it. You just got to do it. And the thing I keep thinking about is the perspective that gives everybody is, you know, important. And we can all remember that story and go, when we freak out about, dang it, I got dropped on a call today because of my bad cable connection or whatever my problem is. It's not that. There are people who are worse off. And one thing at Salesforce we get hammered on in a good way a lot, presented, offered as a tip is, it's from Mark Benioff, is just start with gratitude, whatever. And and I'm sure these people get through their day by recognizing what they're grateful for.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a good story.
That's beautiful. Well, I'm grateful to be able to share, and grateful for our listeners. I'm grateful for you, and I'm grateful, yeah, that we get to, you know, have these opportunities every week to learn, to share, to be inspired, and continue to grow.
Yeah, it's fun. Thank you.
All right. So that's a wrap for today.
All right. We'll see you next week.
One silver lining to the current times is the ability to attend great online events that would otherwise be missed because they're not in your local area. A great example is Send Cal Dreamin', coming up Tuesday, June 22nd and the 23rd from 9 to noon. It's not the full day, just the mornings on both days. Join me and other great speakers helping make the most of your Salesforce investment. It will cost only your valuable time and attention. More details at johnklein.com/CCD.